governments do in Turkey, in China. I mean, these are the governments that are imprisoning them.
Right. So there's China, Turkey, Egypt that are imprisoning journalists. But there's also, that's one problem. Then there's a second really large problem around the world in terms of being able to do your work as a journalist. And that's impunity in killings of journalists. That's a problem that we've seen in Mexico continue throughout the last decade. When a government does not punish, does not go after the killers of journalists, this just emboldens more attacks and more killings of journalists.
What are you calling for at CPJ?
In terms of impunity? We're calling the international community to shed a light on this, and we're calling on governments like the government of Mexico to investigate and punish those who are killing journalists.
And overall, these two reports, one on arrests, one on killings, what do you overall hope to accomplish?
You know, we really think that the international community and pressure, international pressure, is one of the best weapons we have to protect journalists. We are calling on the international community to pressure governments like the Turkish government, like the Chinese government, to release journalists, and to call on Mexican authorities to investigate and protect journalists who are doing their job.
I want to thank you so much for being with us. Maria Salazar-Ferro, Director of the Committee to Protect Journalists Emergencies Department. And that does it for our show, Democracy Now!, now accepting applications for our paid year-long news fellowship. Details at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Renee Feldstein, Augusta Nermin Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gattestino, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Amy Goodman. Have a happy New Year and good news next year.
The new WHFR Journal will not be heard this week so that we can bring you the following special presentation from Public Radio International, A Season's Griot 2017. It will return next week at its regularly scheduled time.
Welcome back to A Season's Griot on PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Madafo. Here again is Griot Mitch Capel.
I'm thinking back to since the climate of politics is so heated right now, I'm thinking back to when President Obama was elected the first time around, and how excited everybody was, and how, you know, I never thought in my lifetime, and even my parents' lifetime, that we would see an African-American president elected, president of the United States. So it was, you know, I was on the phone with my kids and my parents. We were teleconferencing, and we were talking about all the, you know, our emotions and how excited we were. And my parents were saying how, you know, it was crazy. They never thought they'd see it because they had grown up through Jim Crow and civil rights. And you know, I mean, my great-grandparents were enslaved, and, you know, and I know the history of my whole family. So, you know, we were talking about all of that, and we never thought we'd see the day. So I tried to go to sleep, and I could not go to sleep. So I got up, and I got a pen, paper, and I wrote what I call the election slide, similar to the electric slide, but it's the election slide. And it went like this. I said, the ancestors are dancing with the living. Even those whose decision it was to drown in the Atlantic are ecstatically sliding electionally on the ocean's floor to a syncopathic Babatunde African drumbeat with a spattering of Ella scattering while Negro spirituals sing back up on drums is Roach, monks on piano with his Thelonious approach, Miles is on horn with Dizzy and Satchmo, chanting hypnotically is Geronimo, while Mr. Bojangles and Little Sammy and even old Uncle Ben and I ain't your mammy are smiling as they filing down the soul train line. This time is now. This time is here. Mud Deer and all those who fear the dogs and the hoses and the whips have a new dip in their hip and a new glide in their stride as they slide and move with the audacity of a hope groove realized while singing the chorus, yes, we can and yes, we did, as a new day dawns over pyramids with a prophecy fulfilled. We are the ones we have been waiting for. The election slide.
Hasante sana, hasante.
Ashe matavo.
Ashe. Hansantari avalji la siwana wa jane. Ahaya.
Alafia.
Alafia. Hase la wa shawo. Hase ala shawo na wale. Amba jaldi azala lili gili lalo mazali nga.
Alafia madafo.
Asante. Ashe. Ashe paku.
Alafia madafo.
Asante, asante san.
Ale, ale.
Ayelu bajale, bajale. Ashe. Ya jula mazali onyuku. Imajulo makali akujulo, imajulo makali akujulo, imajala, imajala. Ashe, ha! Aye, nu bajale, bajale.
Here again is Griot Joyce Greer with another story to tell.
A long, long, long time ago, the Creator was creating the universe, the world, the planets, the stars. He created the moon and some little baby moons. And he created his sun and some little baby suns. But the mama moon noticed after a time that father, son, and his babies were beaming down on the earth and people had been created and it was too hot. They duck under trees trying to cool off, duck into a hut trying to cool off. And the mama moon thought on this problem until she came up with a plan. The mama moon said to the father's son when she peeped around the earth, "It's too hot. Those people down on the earth are suffering. Father, son, you need to solve this problem. They are suffering from all that heat." And he thought on what she shared. He didn't know what to do. And more time passed, and he could look down from the heavens and see that the people were indeed suffering from all the heat, but he didn't know what to do. And the mama moon started thinking on it, thinking on the problem until she came up with a plan. One day when the mother moon knew the father's son wasn't watching, she took a sack and she filled it with rocks and stones and pebbles. And then she threw it over her shoulder and she started struggling with it down to the ocean. And she looked up in the heavens and said, "Father, son, you need to give up your babies. I'm giving up mine. You know they'll hit the water and change into creatures that can live in the ocean. Those people are suffering from the heat, so I'm willing to give up my babies." And she struggled with that sack until she got to the ocean and swung it out into the ocean. And the father's son, who watched her do this, started thinking, "The people are suffering from the heat. I don't want to give up my babies. I don't want to give them up." And finally, he made up his mind. And he took a sack, and he placed each son into the sack. S-U-N. Each child. S-O-N. He placed them into the sack. And with a heavy heart, he went to the ocean and took that sack and swung it out over the waters. And instantly, his sons changed into creatures that could live in the ocean. One turned into a dolphin and went leaping away from the seashore. Another one became a porpoise, and another became a whale. And they were shining and glittering, still glowing from having lived up in the heavens. But the father's son, with a heavy heart, floated back up into the heavens to be by himself. Oh, he was so lonely in the heavens by himself. He moved across the sky thinking, I miss my sons. The father's son happened to peep around the earth. He saw that Mama Moon with her babies. Oh, he said, you tricked me. You tricked me. You said you'd give up yours if I gave up mine. I gave up mine. And he went running down to the ocean, and he looked into the ocean waters and saw one of his sons. It was moving so fast. It was a beautiful blue and yellow fish, still glowing, still shining. And the father's son reached into the waters and pulled him out and laid him there on the shore. And after a time, his son started gasping for air and couldn't breathe. And he realized that it couldn't live out of the water now, so he pushed it back into the waters. And he said, oh, no, I gave up mine. And he continued to look until he saw another one of his sons that had turned into a dolphin. And was leaping in the water, and it was still glowing, still shining from having been a son that had lived up in the sky. And he reached into the waters and pulled that son out. And it lay there on the beach, but after a time it started gasping for air and struggling to breathe. It couldn't breathe out of the water now. And the father's son, because he loved it, so he pushed it back into the water and watched it swim away. And with a heavy heart, he floated up into the heavens to be by himself. And that's where he is to this day. And the Africans who tell this story, they tell their children, and children grow up and pass this story down to their children, that all day long, as the sun moves across the heavens, that father's son is chasing after that Mama Moon. And she's running. Oh, she's running, staying ahead of him, and he's right behind her saying, you better run. You better run. If I catch you, I'm going to pay you back for tricking me. And she stays ahead of him, and they circle the earth. Some Africans believe this causes day, and this causes night.
Thank you for listening to this year's A Season's Griot. I'm Madafo, and I look forward to another Kwanzaa celebration with you next year. I'll leave you with a poem from Mario Jeter.
Welcome. This is Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa is the harvest for the children of the sun. 7 days of learning and a lot of fun. Kwanzaa is the colors red, black, and green. Kwanzaa, holy days made for kings and queens. Look at our ceremonies, singing our songs of glee. The lighting of the candles make it fun for you and for me. As we pass down this cup of unity, drinking in our rich heritage from now to eternity. Take time to learn of Kwanzaa, and its principles you'll find to be righteous and true. Take time to learn of Kwanzaa. It's African, just like you. It's a time of unity, a time to bond with our family and our community. Kwanzaa is a time to celebrate the fruits of our labor, enjoying our plenty while sharing with our neighbor. 7 African holy days. Enjoy them before they're gone. Remember, this is Kwanzaa. So join with us in this glorious song. We need umoja, unity. We need kujishakulia, self-determination. We need ujima, collective responsibility. We need ujamaa, cooperative economics. We need nia, purpose. We need kuumba, creativity. And we need imani, faith. Kwanzaa, a step to liberation. Kwanzaa, a step forward for the entire nation. Kwanzaa helps everyone to see that we're in control of our own destiny. This is Kwanzaa. This is Kwanzaa. This is Kwanzaa.
On behalf of everyone here at WHQR and A Seasons Griot, we thank you for listening. Thanks to our wonderful guests and griots, Mitch Capel, Joyce Greer, and Emily Gunter. Mitch can be reached at gjbug.com, and more information about Emily can be found at urgentinc.org. That's urgentinc.org. Thanks also to our poet-in-residence, Beverly Fields Burnett, and thanks to Mario Jeter and Angela Jeter. We also honor the memory of William Paco Strickland with Asante Sana, written and arranged by William Paco Strickland and Madafo. A Seasons Griot is written, directed, and hosted by Madafo Lloyd Wilson. Be sure your bookcase contains Madafo's book, The Greedy Hyena. Our producer is Mary Bradley. Our editor and technical director is Ken Campbell. Thanks also to George Scheibener and Madeline Hanley. This program is a production of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina. More information about A Seasons Griot is available at whqr.org. Support for this program comes from this station and Public Radio International stations nationwide. This project was also supported by the North Carolina Arts Council, a division of the Department of Natural and Cultural Resources. Thank you for listening to A Seasons Griot. We look forward to presenting next year's Kwanzaa program. Until then, we wish you and your loved ones peace and blessings in your homes and heart. Happy Kwanzaa.
PRI, Public Radio International.
Welcome back to A Seasons Griot from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Madafo. Let's hear now from Griot and Seasons Griot regular, Joyce Greer.
How the animals got their tails. A long, long, long time ago, the Creator created the world. He made the earth and gave it mountains and gave it oceans and rivers and streams, forests and woods. He started creating animals, and he began with large animals. He created elephants and buffalo and hippos and horses, giraffes. Oh, they were so beautiful. Lions roamed the earth. And one day, a lion was walking along and came to a place where the Creator sat. And the lion started talking and asked the question, "Creator, are you going to create any other animals?" And the Creator hadn't thought about it. He pondered it for a time, and all kinds of images came into his mind. He started thinking, other animals? And oh, he started creating. He created fox and beaver and dogs and cats, so many different animals, smaller than the larger animals. And do you know, with this second batch of creation, the Creator hadn't thought to give any of these animals tails. So the rabbit was in that second batch of animals that was created. And oh, that rabbit loved to hop along and visit with all the other animals and carry messages, and one day came across the Creator thinking, and in conversation asked, "Creator, do you plan to create any other animals?" And the Creator had not thought of it. But oh, again, all kinds of animals came into mind. Smaller animals. He thought of mice. Oh, he thought of lizards. Beautiful animals of all colors and all shapes. But he didn't think to give them tails either. Well, time passed, a lot of time. And the Creator one day, in talking to a spider, the spider asked, "Do you plan to create any other creatures?" And the Creator started thinking again. And in this next burst of creativity, he created insects of all kinds. And that's when the problem started. The Creator created flies, all kinds of insects, but flies became the problem. There were so many of them. They started landing on the bigger animals who had no tails, and they couldn't swish them off. Oh, the flies were biting them and digging into them, and there was no way except to run and rub up against a tree or run and slide into the waters of a lake to get those pesky flies off their hides. And the animals started fussing and grumbling and mumbling. And the rabbit listened at all of this. And then he went hopping up to a spider web and said to the spider, "Spider, climb up into the heavens. Tell the Creator, flies causing problems. Flies biting. He's biting. He's biting." And so the spider crawled up into the heavens and said, "Creator, there are problems on the earth. That fly, that pesky fly, he's biting." And the Creator thought, oh, no. He thought on it for a bit of time. And he started thinking, "I don't want to destroy a fly, but, oh, what can I do to help the other animals?" And he thought on it and thought on it until he thought of tails. And he created them in his mind. And he sent a big mountain of tails, boom, down to the earth. So many tails, a big heap of them, all colors, all shapes, all sizes. And Rabbit was given the job of running around and telling all the other animals, "Come choose a tail, come choose a tail, and then you can swish the flies away if they bother you." Well, of course, there were a lot of animals not bothered by the flies, but there were so many that were bothered. And they lined up as Rabbit instructed them, and they moved up in that line till they got to that big mountain of tails. And then they had to choose. Oh, the elephant walked around. He looked at big tails and small tails, and he spotted one near the bottom that just seemed the perfect tail. And he reached down, he got it in his mouth, and turned around, and other animals were watching when he went boing, and that tail attached, and he walked away swishing his tail. And horses chose tails that could swish the flies. Long, beautiful tails, all colored tails. And one by one, the different animals walked up in that line, and the line just got longer and longer and longer. Some were impatient. They'd step out of line and look ahead. Oh, that line seemed miles and miles long. They kept moving up. They talked with the animal in front of them and the animal behind them. They talked about what kind of tail they wanted. And they moved up and they moved up. They slowly moved up until they got to the front of the line. And then the big decision, which tail to choose. And there was still a big heap of tails. The fox stood in line for a long time. And he kept thinking, I love my color. A beautiful, rich brown color. I want a tail that matches my body color. And finally, he got to the head of the line, and he looked high and he looked low, and all around the edges of the bottom, he looked until he finally saw the color he wanted, and he pulled out that tail with his mouth, and it lay there on the ground just the right size, and he put it on. Boing! Oh, so many animals complimented him and said, you chose so wisely. You look beautiful. And he held his head up and walked away proudly, swishing his tail. And the beaver, when he finally got to the front of the line, he looked and looked, and lo and behold, he saw this flat tail. And it was so funny looking, and he liked it right away. He chose it. And the possum, he waited in line for the longest time. And finally, he got to the front of the line. And he looked and looked. Not as many tails now. So many had been chosen. That line had been so long. Oh, the possum walked around what was left of the tails. And finally, he spotted one that had no hair on it. No fur of any kind. And he looked at it and laughed and thought, I like this tail. I like it. And that's what he chose. And oh, the animals laughed at him. They laughed and said, you chose that? You chose that tail? Oh, he held his head up high and walked away. He loved his tail. And the pile went down. The tails went down, there were fewer and fewer, and meanwhile the rabbit had gone so far and wide all over the land, passing the message, tell everybody, come get in line, come get a tail. Even if you don't need a tail, come get a tail. And they moved up in line and moved up in line, all the animals, until finally the rabbit started thinking, I want a tail. Flies don't bother me, but I like a tail. And so he got in the back of the line. And it was still a pretty long line, and he hopped up, and he hopped up and kept hopping up until finally the rabbit was at the head of the line. But all the tails were gone. There'd been a mountain of tails, so many, but they were all gone. And the rabbit looked around, and all he saw laying there on the ground was one little bit of fluff. And he looked at it and he said, is that a tail? That's a tail. He looked around. There was no one to talk to. He laughed again. He smiled and looked at that little bit of fluff and picked it up and boing, hopped away with his tail. And that's how the animals got their tails.
Stony the road we trod, bitter the chastening rod, felt in the days when hope unborn had died, yet with a steady beat have not our weary feet. Come to the place for which our Father sighed. We have come over a way that with tears has been watered. We have come treading our path through the blood of the slaughtered, out from the gloomy past, till now we stand at last where the white gleam of our bright star is cast.
We, the peoples of the African diaspora, who outwardly migrated and populated this planet, are and always have been the custodians of this earth with a mission to bring peace, wisdom, and balance to all humanity. I am Muti Emily, bringing each of you the joy, love, and prosperity of the eight elements of the Rites of Passage Youth Empowerment Foundation programs, which use the high values of the seven principles of Kwanzaa. The time-honored African traditions have given us the contemporary Kwanzaa principles and the rites of passage elements to identify and guide the youth from adolescence to adulthood through their geniuses and nurture them to use it for their lives' higher purpose. The program is designed to facilitate, build, and strengthen the social, moral, and emotional life skill competencies of youth, families, and communities. Traditional African societies recognize the importance of guiding their youth successfully into adulthood. African societies initiated youth into the cultural heritage of people through an academic and educational process we call rites of passage ceremonies. The first element of the rites of passage ceremony is the elders, the parents, and the mentors who come together to teach using the seventh principle of Kwanzaa, which is imani, faith. The second element is the youth. The separation of youth from their friends and family, and especially from their devices, to come and learn from the elders, the passing on and receiving of wisdom and knowledge for the sustainability and the continuity of our balanced world. This matches the first principle of Kwanzaa, umoja, unity. The third element is the sacred space, which is prepared by the elders to facilitate learning, communication, and sharing. This matches the fourth principle of Kwanzaa, Ujamaa, cooperative economics. The fourth element of the rites of passage process is the releasing of old destructive habits. This element is enhanced by the third principle of Kwanzaa, Ujima, collective work and responsibility. Youth completing the challenges of the program will be equipped with the tools necessary to effect positive change in their life. The youth learn through truth, honesty, and empowerment, not fear. The fifth element of the rites of passage process are the challenges. We use all Kwanzaa principles in the challenges through experiential activities, study, and practice. Our children learn that they are not alone in their efforts to improve their lives and the lives of others in the sustaining of the continuity of our world. The sixth element is a transition to self-acceptance and self-love. This is enhanced by the second principle of Kwanzaa, Kujijakulia. The seventh element of the rites of passage process is the new awakenings to new beginnings. This is enhanced by the fifth principle of Kwanzaa, Nia, purpose. The eighth element is the celebration of the final ceremony. This is enhanced by the sixth principle of Kwanzaa, Kuumba, creativity. The Rites of Passage program encourages more communities to empower youth to learn how to help themselves, trust in themselves, and make choices that make sense to them within the context of their social environment. All children can learn no matter what the circumstances of their birth or their social environment. Every adult acts as a facilitator to work with and to instill in our children the regular habits of achievement. All children respond best when expectations are high and when goals are raised. We must help every child develop their qualities of character and instill in them their internal moral compass of right and wrong. We must help them obtain a sense of self and a sense of purpose in their young lives. Margaret Mead said, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has." Thank you. I am Muti Emily Diane Gunter.
And the young boy went to his grandfather. He said, "Grandfather, is it true that lion is king of the jungle?" "This is true, my son. But tell me, why do you ask?" "Well, grandfather, I am confused. In all the stories I read and hear, man will always defeat the lion. So how can this be true, grandfather? How can lion be king?" The old man thought quickly with a subtle smile of remembrance on his face. He said, "It will always be that way, my son, until the lion tells the story." We'll be right back with more of A Seasons Creole from PRI, Public Radio International.
PRI, Public Radio International.
Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom over me, over me. And before I'll be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free. Once I stood before my grandfather, the griot of my family, and he told me the stories I will tell to you. It is a universal tradition that the children listen to their elders. So the elders, also in tradition, must be prepared to give to the children everything they need. One of the most effective tools for bringing people together to listen and share with each other is the age-old art form, storytelling. It's been that way since the beginning of time. Along the continuum of space and time, over the eons, mankind has endeavored to record his movements, hopes, and dreams, scattering them about like breadcrumbs along the way, so that those who would brave the trail would confidently follow. Therefore, the most important element in this universe are the souls of our children. They are our most precious jewels, our untouched God spirits, our future. As adults and parents, we are compelled to give children everything that will allow them opportunities to grow strong and confident in the knowledge of self and thoroughly understand their responsibility to the world community. When our children are taught to tell their story, all of society flourishes. Telling stories is as simple as breathing. Everyone can do it, and everyone loves to hear a story. Stories are everywhere. If you listen, you will hear the trees speaking through the leaves, birds tweedly-dop-bop, a jazz melody offering their own soundtrack to this wonder called life. Listen, it's storytelling time. It's storytelling time. It's storytelling time.
Griot Gold by Beverly Fields Burnett. Out of the West African sun, with its ancient sensibilities, the wisdom keepers emerged, male and female, with their noble and sophisticated style and verbal craft. Call them tribal historian, ambassador, teacher, praise singer, spoken word artist, storyteller. Steeped in ceremony and masterful distinction, the griot was the genealogist that Haley sought in his noble ancestral quest. With mastery of the kora, the kalimba, the balafone, or the powerful djembe, the jali or the griot mesmerizes the community with long-ago stories of village families, knows the history of births and deaths, struggles and survivals, rulers and tyrants, makes sense of lineage and links to the historical masses, recalls forgotten names and pathways as he or she spews out the lineage and links to history. And as the griot ages, as he grows deeper in his own knowledge and wisdom, he sets his watchful sights for a younger one in his own family line, one who might possess the mind and the special eye, one who might begin the careful training, the discipline, and the discernment for a lifetime of tribal memory and selfless duty. Even in this century, we call out our own well-known griots and history bearers in the spirit of old-time wordsmiths. Golden griots like Paul Lawrence Dunbar and James Weldon Johnson are gone. Griots like Hurston and Hughes, Mary Carter Smith, Jackie Torrance and Maya, and our own Baba Chuck Davis and Gail Anderson left us volumes of their precious messages. Yet some griots, storytellers, are still among us, like Alice Walker and Mama Linda Goss, who continue to gather the golden word like a precious grain, generously passing their genius on to the people, keeping us connected to our historical selves as they ring many villages to order.
Mrs. Beverly Fields Burnett, better known in these circles as Poetess.
Lift every voice and sing, till earth and heaven ring, ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. Let it resound loud as the rolling sea. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun, let us march on till victory is won.
Greetings, brothers and sisters. Alafia. Thank you for tuning in to this year's A Season's Griot. Asante Sana. I am your host, Madafo Anochi. There are men and women, usually with black marks on either of the palms of their hands, with good memories and a great capacity to remember words exactly as they had heard them spoken. These people were told the history of the tribes, under oath, never to alter, add, or subtract any word. Anyone who so much as thought of changing any of the stories of his tribe fell immediately under a high curse, which covered him, his children, and his children's children. These tribal storytellers were called griots, guardians of the Umlando, keepers of the tribal history. And I, Madafo Anochi Lloyd Wilson, am proud to be one of these.
Kwanzaa is a week-long celebration held in the United States and other nations of the West African diaspora. The Kwanzaa celebration honors African heritage in African American culture and is observed from December the 26th until January the 1st. Kwanzaa has seven core principles called Nguzo Saba. They are Umoja, unity, to strive for and maintain unity in the family, the nation, the community. Kuja Shakalia, self-determination, to define ourselves, name ourselves, to create ourselves. We no longer answer to Negro, colored, or any negative. Ujima, collective work and responsibility to build and maintain our community together. Ujamaa, cooperative economics to build and maintain our own stores, shops, and other businesses and to profit from them together. Nia, purpose to make our collective vocation the building and developing of our community in order to restore our people to their traditional greatness. Kuumba, creativity, to do as much as we can in every way we can to make our community more beautiful and beneficial than we inherited it. And Amani, faith, to believe with all our hearts in our people, our parents, our teachers, our leaders, and righteousness and victory of our struggle.
Now we welcome Griot Mitch Capel, also known as Granddaddy Junebug. Mitch has been telling stories all over the United States since 1985. He joins us today to tell his favorite story.
When I was 3 years young, my brother Jeff and I would visit grandmothers, our grandparents on different occasions. And when we stayed with my father's parents, Eleanor Lee Capel and A.C. Capel, my grandmother would always, before she tucked us into bed, or she would tuck us into bed, and she would pull out an old, worn edition of the Life and Works of Paul Laurence Dunbar, which had been in our family probably since it was published in 1906. She would pull out that book and she would start reading to us a cabin tale about a weasel and a bear. And just watching her and hearing her, and she seemed to get so much joy out of it and laughing and, you know, and I was so young, I didn't even know what a bear was. The biggest animal I knew was a German Shepherd, because that's what we had. And but just the joy of her telling that story and the joy that it brought us. And when I finished college, my father gave me that book. And when I started reading it, I was like, when he handed it to me, it was like, oh my God. I mean, just the look of the book, it was worn and torn and pages missing and no cover. It was like the most loved book I had ever seen in my life. And so I started reading it, and when I got to that story about a cabin tale, I was like, wow, I remember this story. Oh, this is the story my grandmother told me when I was 3, 4, 5 years old. And so I started reading it to my kids. And of course, they wanted to hear it every night. And by repetition, I memorized the story. This is my variation of the story. So it's not exact, because it's just the way I do it. But this is how it goes. And it starts out with, want a story? Just hear that. Where you think I get a story at? Didn't I tell you thee last night? Go away, honey, you ain't right. I got something else to do besides just telling tales to you. Tell you just one? Well, let me see. What that one are gonna be? When you's old, your memory fail. Seem like I don't know no tale. Well, sit down there in that chair and keep still if you want to hear. And take that chin up off them hands and set up nice now, goodness land. Hold yourself up like your pa. Bet nobody ever saw him all scrunched down like you was then. High-toned girls and boys makes high-toned women's and men's. Once they was this big, big bear. Used to live round here somewhere in a cave. He was so big, he could carry off a pig. like you'd pick a chicken up, or your little bit of pup. And he had two great big eyes, just about a saucer size. Why, they looked like two balls of fire dancing round upon a wire when that bear was mad, and laws, y'all ought to see his paws. Now, did I see him? Child, how you expect that I's going to recollect this here yarn I's trying to spin if you keeps on putting in? There now, don't you cheat, lest I send you off to sleep. Now, this here bear go tromping round, eating everything he found. No one couldn't have a farm case that bear he do him harm. And they couldn't catch that scamp anywhere he wanted to tramp. Dare the scoundrel make his track, do his due, and get on back. He was such a sly old limb. Traps was just like fun to him. Now, down near where Mr. Bear lived, there was a weasel there. But they wasn't friends at all, case that weasel was so small. And the bear, just for sass, turned his nose up when he'd pass. Weasel small, of course, but my, them little animals is sly. So this one says he, "I'll just fix that bear, you'll see." So he fixes up a plan, and he hunts the farmer man. Now when the farmer see him come, he mince looking mighty glum. But he catches up a stick, and the weasel, he speak up quick. He said, "Hold on, Mr. Farmer Man, I want to explain my little plan. If you wait, I'll tell you where and just how to catch that bear. But I tell you, now you must give me one fat chicken first." Well, the farmer scratched his head. Last he said, "I'll make the tree." So the weasel ate his hen, smacked his mouth, and said, "Well then, set your bait and trap tonight and you'll catch that bear, right?" So the weasel ups to see Mr. Bear and says he, "Well, friend bear, we ain't been friends, but tonight hard feelings end. Now, if you ain't too proud to steal, we can get a splendid meal. Course I wouldn't come to you, but it must be done by two. It's a trap, but we can beat all day tricks and get the meat." "Course I's with you," says the bear. "Come on, weasel, show me where." Well, they walks along until that their meat began to smell in the trap. Then weasel say, "Okay, you hold your paw this way, whilst I hold this spring back so, then you grab the meat and go." Well, that bear, he had to grin as he put his big paw in. But when he juked up, kabing, weasel, he let go this spring. "Then," I said to weasel, "there, I done caught you, Mr. Bear." Oh, that bear did snort and spout, trying his bestest to get out. But the weasel say, "Goodbye. Weasel small, but weasel sly." And the weasel went and run, told that farmer what he done, and the farmer come down there with a cage and caged that bear. And if y'all want to see him too, just go and visit the Ashboro Zoo. There now, ain't that story fine? Run along then, never mind. Want some more? You rascal, you? No sirs and ma'ams, that'll do.
That was my friend, Griot Mitch Capel, Granddaddy Junebug.
And to show you how it went full circle, storytelling goes full circle. When my grandmother, Elnora Lee Capel, got to the point where my parents couldn't care for her anymore in their home, and she had to go to assisted living, and she went, and they didn't call it Alzheimer's back then. They would say, you know, "Ma's getting a little scattery." I would go visit my grandmother in the assisted living, and she would be there, and I'd walk in, and she'd say, "Hey, Jeffrey." And that's my older brother. I'd say, "No, Ma." She'd go, "Hey, well, Ken." And that's my younger brother. I said, "No, Ma, it's Mitchell." She said, "Oh, I knew that. I was just playing." And she would sit there and be staring out in the space, and I would start. Once there was this big, big bear. She said, "Used to live around here somewhere in a cave. He was so big, he could carry off a..." I'd say, "Pig." And I would run with it, and as soon as she remembered, I'd let her run with it as far as she could, and I would help her. And So I got to tell that story to her that she told to me at 3 when she was 93.
There's more to come on A Season's Griot from PRI, Public Radio International.
WHF.
From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
Dearborn.
Que haya justicia, más que...
Clarksdale, south of Memphis, Tennessee.